Welcome to Mom's Dish, Minnesota. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Nicole. Minnesota can be cold 6 months of the year, and the state mascot is the mosquito. But we are full of stories. Local entrepreneurs, inspiring individuals, travel destinations, and more.
We believe in the power of personal stories, have a passion for making our communities feel more connected, and highlighting amazing Minnesotans. At the end of each episode, we will also feature a song from a local musician.
All you need to know for Women on the Go.
Welcome back, everybody, to episode 24 of Mom's Dish MN. It's hard to believe that we are coming up on 25 episodes here soon. We are very excited to have you join us for another episode. We have kind of a few different things in the works over the next few months, so definitely stay tuned. We have a Explore Minnesota Challenge that'll be coming out mid-July. And then in August will be our 1 year anniversary. So we definitely have some special events and ideas up our sleeve of what we can do to celebrate. So also keep an eye out for that.
Yes, very exciting. Can't believe we have so many episodes under our belt and coming up on 1 year. It's flown by. If you haven't noticed, we have a fundraiser also going on right now. So lots of stuff we're working on. We are raising money for many organizations in the Twin Cities that support people of color. And right now we are raising money currently when this episode airs for Voices of Racial Justice, And we've been sharing all about these organizations that we're donating to on Facebook and Instagram. So if you're not following along, I recommend checking that out because we've shared some really cool and interesting information about these places. The one that we donated to most recently was Appetite for Change. If you've never heard of them, I recommend checking out their website, doing amazing work in North Minneapolis. So please, please, please donate money. You can see all the organizations we're donating to on our social media pages, and our Venmo is Mom's Dish MN.
And next up, we have our musicians. So as you guys know, we always have a featured musician at the end of every episode. And actually, we just got a feedback yesterday about wanting us to kind of refresh what the band name is and the song near the end of the episode, right before the music comes on. So stay tuned. That might be something we'll be working on in the next couple episodes here, since so that you guys can have that information on hand. So our musician for this episode is the Twin Cities band Ghost Wagon with their song Lost. So Ghost Wagon is a collaborative of similarly minded musicians led by singer-songwriter Chuck Nelson. They're creating earnest and often darkly emotional tales presented via accessible melodies and a come join us on the front porch vibe. So labels are kind of tricky though. Simply put, this is American music. Ghost Wagon sounds flow from Americana to rock to country to pop to folk. The songs include multi-layered instruments and guest players such as fiddle, sax, ukulele, mandolin to create a rich expression as well as experience. So stay tuned for Lost by Ghost Wagon at the end of the episode.
Yes, and I just listened to that song, and it's really fun, and I liked it, so make sure you check it out. The guest today is also really fun. We had a great time talking with Sarah from Briner Law. She is an attorney. She's a mom. She's a friend. She's very easy to talk to, and she shared all about her law firm and her practice of helping individuals and families with estate planning. And she talks about all the ins and outs of estate planning, the different types of estate plans that you can have for your family depending on your needs. She has a very unique approach to estate planning that is very thorough. And you can make sure that you are leaving a legacy for your family that you know your kids are in good hands, your money is going to the places that you want it to go, and that your wishes are being heard. So you are going to love this episode. Estate planning is something, unfortunately, we all need to think about. And so take a listen and get in contact with Sarah if you need her services. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Mom's Dish MN. I am especially excited about this episode because I think this is a topic that everyone needs to think about, but it can seem a little scary and you're just not sure where to start. So we thought this would be an excellent resource for all of you. We're speaking with Sarah today from Briner Law, and I'm not going to say too much because I'm going to ask her if she can just share a little bit about herself, her background, how she kind of decided to get into this field and open her law firm.
Yeah. So, hello. I am so excited to be doing this with you guys. And yes, it is something that is so important for all moms, but something we definitely don't want to think about, right? It's a hard topic to focus on, especially when you're trying to do all the other things. So it's interesting too, because a lot of people will say, well, I went to law school because I want to help people. And you're like, yeah, you thought it would be a really great salary and all those things, right? But I really did think that when I went to law school. And I knew from the time I was about five that I was going to go to law school. And so I would, you know, tell my parents when I was in like elementary school about when I was going to be a lawyer. And I heard all the stories about how I like to fight a lot and, you know, really negotiate. And I see my kids doing it now. And I was like, yeah, it's just in the blood. So originally, though, I wanted to focus on family law. And I applied and was accepted to a joint JD PhD program in psychology. I was going to focus on child development and how I could be a conduit, so to speak, for really healing in children of divorce and trauma and when handling the family's legal case. And I kind of got talked out of that a little bit. I ended up going a different route to a different program. I went to law school in Chicago. And when I graduated, I took my first job in family law. I stuck with family law. And I took a job with this woman who was a solo attorney. And my experience really was kind of like you would see on some crazy TV show or something. I showed up for my first day out of law school. I was handed a stack of files. And she was like, court's at 9:30. Good luck. And I'm like, Oh my God. So that was kind of my intro to a solo practice and, you know, working for one attorney. And so as a solo, I mean, she owned her own firm. She didn't work with any other attorneys and she was completely disorganized. She didn't treat her employees well, really, nor her clients either. And, you know, it really felt like she was always in competition with the other females that worked for her, which to me is just weird. It's like, it's a weird way to be. So the environment really felt oppressive to me. And I think I was too young and inexperienced emotionally really to, I guess, understand that it wasn't family law or the practice of law in general that was making me unhappy. But at the time, like, that is what I thought. And I said to you guys before we started, like, I'm a Virgo. I'm super into organization and systems and like a logic to everything. And I have never seen anyone run a business and be as disorganized as she was. So she would ask me to go find like the Jones file in the cabinet. And I'd open the drawer and the files were like flung in there with no filing system or order to it. It was like killing my soul. So from there, I moved on to a much larger firm. And I was thinking somehow like that was going to be the answer to my happiness. I don't really know what I was thinking there, but I guess I thought, you know, that there'd be better systems in place for my Virgo heart. And as I worked my way through the ranks over the next decade, I eventually became one of the youngest partners at the firm that they'd ever had. And all this time I would be working away at all hours of the day and night and, you know, just making mental notes of how I would do things differently. And not only more efficiently, but at the center of all the issues that every place I worked had, I knew that I could do it with more heart. I, especially as a managing attorney and then a managing partner, I really saw behind the curtain of what was most important to the owners of the firm and all of that. And I'm sure as you guys can imagine, like client well-being and the experience like that the client goes through, not on their list. not even an issue, right? Like not a thought in their mind. So fast forward, getting married, having my son, returning to work, going through all the battles of, you know, like how long could I really afford to take off for maternity leave and coming back and nursing and battling pumping at work in a closet and a colicky baby, all the mom things, right?
Yeah.
All the mom things. So when it came time to have another baby, I had a rough pregnancy with my daughter. That included being ordered to bed rest, I'm sure more than you guys like ever wanted to know. And eventually I just said, enough. I can't do this anymore. I want to have control over my own schedule and my clients, who I choose to work with, what I bill, how I run the firm and the systems. And really most importantly for me was moving back to that heart center of why I chose to do all of this at all. And that for me was really to serve families. So I thought a lot about like what kinds of law I wanted to include in my practice. And it came down to the question for me of like, where could I do the most good for families with young children and where I really could serve. And of course, you know, in the midst of all that, I was going through my own journey of motherhood. And so I knew that this was like where I was being called. And so I was active in the birth community at the time. I lived in Atlanta. That's where I'm from mostly. And, you know, the experiences that I had as a new mom, and this is like where I'm really real and open. I don't really hide anything, regardless of being like the lawyer at in a firm or anything like that. So, you know, for me, the experience I had as a new mom of needing guidance and support and non-judgment, you know, love from my community of women probably honestly saved my life through postpartum depression and feeling isolated as a new mom and all of the things that we all experience, but, you know, nobody talks about, yeah? Like nobody talks about these things. And during that time, I formed a bond with a mom's group on Facebook, and I would get frequent requests from them, you know, about like, you're the resident lawyer of the group. Can you do wills? Can you do trust? Like, can you set up a business for us? And I was like, you know what? I have more fun doing this than like anything that I've done in ages, really the whole time I had been a lawyer. It was kind of like the first time I found my lawyer heart, you know, versus being like, this is killing me. I actually want to do this now. And so it all just kind of fell into place from there. And that's how Legal Mama was born. So no pun intended. Well, maybe a little. it is amazing now because I've been officially operating as a firm since 2014. I started doing wills on the side for a lot of those moms in 2012. And it really is amazing because I see all of that kind of coming together of those things that I wanted to have happen, those visions actually taking place now where, you know, I have fair pricing using flat fee billing and hands-on with my client experience. And it doesn't end, you know, just because we signed documents or, you know, those kind of things. And so to me, I really think too, like the most important work that I do is just lifting up other women and other moms. I serve not only my mom clients, but really the women who work for me too. And I really come from a place of fierce devotion and leadership to all of those women. And so if I succeed, then you succeed, you know, and when you drive from that place of service and giving your whole heart to your work, then you are you're supporting, you know, those women and the empowerment of those women. So it isn't a competition like what I experienced going into the law. It is a support system. And really, I have wanted to create Legal Mama as like a way of life for the people that work with me, for the people that work for me and all of that. So as a funny side note, I have a Peloton and one of the instructors in there, her name is Robin Arzon. Check her out. She's Robin at Robin NYC, I think. She's amazing. So I was doing one of her rides the other day, and she says a real queen fixes another queen's crown without even telling her it was crooked in the first place. Sometimes she'll say without telling the world that it was crooked. Either way, it's like, just let that sink in for a minute, right? It's amazing. Like, and I'm like, yes, queen, like that's what I'm talking about. It's like lifting other women up, making them self-sufficient, and helping moms create that legacy, you know, for their loved ones in the process, so they feel supported and confident that they have everything. Like, I'll organize it for you. I'll put it in place from a legal perspective, but that lets you take control. And so there's so many things, you know, we can't control. I mean, look at this crazy AF pandemic, you know, for one, this is bananas. Mm-hmm. So like, what can we control out of it? We're all afraid we're going to get sick, or are we exposing ourselves too soon, or, you know, all those things. So what you can do is make sure if something does happen, that the decisions are ours. The voice is ours. You know, this is our only chance to do that in the legal system that we call probate. And so that's where my perspective comes from. So I know that's a very long roundabout answer to why I started my firm, but it all ties in together. And at the core of everything, you know, at least for me, it's for serving moms, parents, women in business, and really most importantly, serving from the heart. And so Legal Mama really is just kind of my alter ego of going from being a mama to that, you know, fierce mama bear for all my queens, right? So like for all of you, I'm here for everybody. And so, you know, that's kind of how I roll.
Yeah. I love so much of what you said too, because it almost feels like you have a friend in the legal world to really put that power back in your hands. Because I think for so long, women have shied away, especially women have shied away from financial planning, estate planning. My husband can deal with it. I don't know. That doesn't make sense to me. And maybe you're working with like a male lawyer or someone that you feel is intimidating and that you can't approach. And I just feel like you just talking to you for a few minutes, you're so approachable. So I loved so much of what you were saying.
Thank you. Yes. And I mean, that's the thing. This is a safe place, you know, and for anything. And you think about it of like, oh, it's this kind of like cold, dry drafting thing. We're doing these documents and it's all this stuff. But the reality is I get to know my clients really, really well. I get to know their personal lives. We talk about things like, what if I ever get divorced, or, you know, things going on in their lives, because most attorneys really only focus on that drafting piece of like, let's put the money in place. It's going to go here until they're this age. Well, yeah, that's great. Any attorney can do that. But the heart of that, you know, what I was talking about of like creating a legacy, going beyond just doing these documents. If all you want, like if somebody comes to me and they say, all I want is to get the documents in place and know that at 25, they get everything, then I will say, go to LegalZoom. Don't pay a lawyer for that. There's nothing in there for you. There's nothing in that for you for guidance or support or any of that stuff. But if you want someone who's going to be your lawyer for life, to know your kids, to when they get to be teenagers, get involved with our yearly or every couple year reviews where they see I'm just a mom, I'm not scary, you know, like if something does happen, they're not afraid to call me, they know who I am. And so that's a completely different relationship than what I experienced, you know, as an employee of a firm and growing up through that system. And so I always tell everybody, you know, when I first talk to them, I say, listen, think about like that town, small town family doctor in like the 1800s. They came out to the house. They knew all the generations of the family, all of those things. I wanted to create that in a lawyer setting and create that community that us, we have, as moms have really lost, right? You know, we've lost that village, but this is kind of my mission of recreating the village in a different way, because we do have to connect with each other virtually and all of these things, especially now, but even just in this century and in these lives that we're living. And so I think that legacy and what we leave for our kids is so incredibly important, and it's just missed. It's forgotten about all the time.
Yes, that I know. It's outstanding. I loved listening to that. And I agree, because you know, so often when somebody were to pass away, you may meet this lawyer that's, you know, the estate lawyer. You're like, who is this person? They don't know who you are. They don't know the situation. You know, it's just another document to them in a sense. And they don't really know the whole story. And this is just such a different way to look at it and to just kind of connect the personal side of it to the papers. Because any experience that I've had with lawyers in the past is definitely just, you know, call me, maybe get my assistant, maybe for a couple minutes. And it's just not personal at all. Like I never felt like any sort of connection to a lawyer by any means.
Yeah.
But I like how you touched on that right now. Everything is just so uncertain. There's nothing really that we can do for certainty, other than maybe we can start thinking about our estate planning and what we, you know, need to prepare for, and just in case something were to happen. When should somebody start looking into starting an estate plan? Like what age, or is there like a certain milestone in their life? And just really, what is estate planning anyways?
Yes, good question. So that ties right into what I was just talking about with controlling the choices. So no matter what your situation, age, family dynamic, your preferences of, you know, what you want to happen, no matter what your income level or assets you have, like where that's at, it really comes down to that control. So the time to start estate planning is when you choose to take control of that outcome of what happens to the ones you love and your assets when you die. And I know as parents that it is super hard to think about. And, you know, I'm like, I can talk about like, well, what happens if you die? Like all day long, it gets like, it's my business, right? You know, but when I step back as a parent, it's still very emotional even for me. So, you know, when you choose to take that control of what happens and think about that hard, you know, those hard decisions as parents, we all know it's an eventuality for us all, right? So we can choose, and I say choose like with air quotes, we can choose because it is a choice. You can either let the court system and the state laws decide what happens to your kids and money, or we can empower ourselves to put the plan in place that we know is right for us, you know, that isn't what the court says, because those things are also bonkers. They don't make a lot of sense, and especially for our generation. And so, I also... just think taking control of how much money comes out of your estate for probate costs instead of using it to do things like support your family. And trust me, probate can be a lot of money. It's a great act of love when you're doing that for your family. You know, you're putting that money aside for something like college instead of court fees. And, you know, administrative costs. So you have to remember too that the plans that we make now are not for us. You know, we won't be here to see them carried out. These choices and this planning, it's for your kids and your, you know, your other family, but it's for your kids. And so now, you know, with all that said, there are certainly some legal triggers that we look at too, you know, that make the need more urgent, maybe, or like that. So first and foremost, having minor children, owning real property, whether that's your home or you have like a cabin, you know, Minnesota, everybody loves their cabins. And things like divorce or blended families. Those are triggers that we have certain things that will take place through the system that you really want to make sure that you're doing the decision making and that you're planning ahead. Those are also the things that are most costly to deal with through probate. So it really, you know, most attorneys will tell you if you have a child, as soon as they turn 18, they should have their own healthcare directive, especially right now where we're seeing not so much that, you know, kids that young are getting sick or anything, but just seeing that you're having to go into the hospital alone and it's hard to make calls or have contact. And then if you're not awake, you know, what would you, once you're 18, you should be able to make those own decisions over your body and things like that. So those things are important too, but it really just comes down to, again, and I mean, just saying it like that, it's like, do you want to have the choice of what happens to your body or do you want somebody else to make that for you? So regardless of age or situation or any of those things, it's really a matter of, are you ready to say, I'm going to do this. I'm going to take control of these decisions that should belong to me.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I know that I used to work in estate settlements at a previous employer way back. Mm-hmm. And your points about how, you know, people don't realize how long it can take and costly it can be for probate and things like that when people don't designate a beneficiary. And I always try and hone that into people that I know as well. Like if you don't have, you know, a beneficiary picked for your assets, then it just amazes me how many people would call in and be like, oh, I have to pay this and this and this, and it's still going to be a long time before the assets actually get contributed. So it's so important to think ahead of time and save that time and money for your family in order to designate that ahead of time. So it's just so, so important.
Agreed. 100% agreed.
So what can people expect for an initial estate planning consultation? Like what would they need to gather? What do they need to list out? Like what do they need to include and think about? What kind of all is involved in that?
So I do things pretty differently than most attorneys, as you might imagine already at this point in our conversation. So I start with a phone consult just to get to know the client a little bit and to explain my process. And then during that call, we schedule what I call a family wealth planning session. And so I don't want to confuse anyone by saying wealth, thinking you have to have a certain amount of money to do that. Again, it's like I talk about the wealth as the wealth of knowledge and just love and energy and the things that you want to leave to your children. That is your legacy too. That is your wealth. So I think that monetary wealth is only a percentage of that human legacy that you leave behind. So I call them family wealth planning sessions for all those reasons. That is a 2-hour, sometimes more, working session where I spend a good deal of time first educating parents on the different types of estate plans and documents available to them just in the state of Minnesota, not just me, but, you know, everywhere. And then we work through how each of those types of plans function, what they do and do not protect. And then I have my families prepare online homework for me ahead of time. And that asks every single question, you know, that I need answers for in order to draft that comprehensive plan. And so that covers all the choices that you need to think about: guardians, trustees, you know, who you designate to act in all of those different roles for you. And if you don't know the difference between guardians and trustees, like, we work through all of that. And so we walk through creating an emergency preparedness plan for the family, and that covers both financials as well as temporary emergency guardians, because that is actually something that there is no place that that gets put in the will or a trust. And so if you're incapacitated, like if you're injured or ill or unconscious, your will isn't in place because you haven't died, then if there is no guardian designated for that interim, that emergency period, then Child Protective Services gets involved. And I don't know about you moms, but that's horrifying to me, lawyer or not. I don't want them anywhere near my kids, or not to say that they don't serve a purpose and have a place in the world, and there are families that certainly need that. It's like, if we take control and make these decisions ahead of time, like, we don't in our decision making. And so that all as well, if you know, if there's anything that needs answering or working through, we do all of that during the session. So we cover all those choices, temporary emergency things. And I do collect all of the financial info then. So on top of the homework, and this is where I love my organization, I send out a mailer that goes to each family. It includes an organizer. It has a checklist label, like, smack on the front of the folder. So it tells you exactly what, like, paper statements, deeds to the house, other physical documents and things before we meet. So that helps with the organization and really frustration out of it for the client, because it's like, you don't have time to be worried about that. You just need to, like, parent and do your thing and let me just tell you exactly what to do. So, and then for those of you who don't know about astrology, Virgos are very methodical, organized, grounded. Like, that's how I like to do things. So by the time we meet, you've had about 2 weeks to gather all of that stuff together. And then in our session, I take the personal financial snapshot, kind of like everything that you've given me, and I show you how it would function in the different plans. So that helps to make a decision based on cost effectiveness for you. And then all those other decisions of, like, those goals, those values, the things that are important to you that most lawyers, like, don't even ask. So part of that homework is 2 pages of questionnaires about, like, what's important to you. Do you care about religion? Do you care about, you know, a cultural identity? Kids playing a musical instrument there to do that? Do you want them to have a job in high school so they're financially independent? You know, just all these kind of things. So we really get down and dirty with all of that. But, you know, so the long and short answer is that I give you a list of everything you need to do and you don't need to worry about it.
Yeah, I was listening to you and to you talk about your wealth, your family wealth planning session. And I'll have to say, I'm impressed, because my husband and I did take some time to get, like, after listening to you, I don't even know if I would call it an estate plan, because it was definitely not in, that in depth, but we do have guardians designated for our children, and we did go through some planning documents and things like that, but it just seems like your process is so much more in depth, and you mentioned there's even different types of estate plans that families can pick from. Do you want to talk a little bit about those?
Yeah. So, and that's really the beauty of conducting the family wealth planning session this way, because there isn't a one size fits all solution for everybody. There really shouldn't be, I should say, because everybody's family dynamic is different and your needs are different and your, you know, things, your insights and all that. So it really should depend on all of those things that I touched on, the kids, the assets, the income. Yeah, sure. Most importantly, though, those visions and goals and the values that are for your family. So one thing for certain that we do focus on, if you have minor children, so that is likely most everyone listening, right? If you have minor children, they have to be removed as beneficiaries from all life insurance policies, retirement plans, any other assets that have beneficiary designations. That sounds counterintuitive or counterproductive that, well, I want them to get those things. And I could honestly spend an entire podcast episode alone on why this is. So suffice it to say, if you have your kids on your assets and you don't know why or how, you know, how you need to change that, why you need to change that, or what to change it to, then call me, reach out to me. I will help you figure it out. But they cannot inherit it legally when they're minors. So if you have minor children, you need a trust. A trust is the way that we deal with this issue. So there are a number of kinds of trusts that we can go, and I can go on about that too. But the long and short of that is that if your minor kids cannot receive an inheritance legally, by law, they aren't old enough to have it. So we place it in a trust, and you, again, going back to this choice, you know, this empowerment, if you create that, you choose who you want to manage it, for how long, until they are what age. So when you say old enough, or when we say old enough, the state and the court system thinks that's 18. Well, I don't think any 18-year-old is old enough to receive a windfall inheritance of their parents, like $1 million life insurance policy or any of those things. I can tell you from personal experience in my own family, it will go to things like BMWs. Okay, so... and you know, that influenced a lot of my decision making on how I handle things for clients with minors is from my own personal experience. So we place it in a trust, and then you choose that age, a more reasonable, suitable, responsible age for them to get it. And, you know, understand this is not about creating trust fund kids. That's not what we're doing here. We are creating a plan of protection of the assets from the cost of probate, the court control, the wrong person or people ending up with the control of the money. And if any of you out there have a parent, a sibling, a relative that you absolutely do not want having access or control, we have a legal way to handle that as well. And a lot of people have that, you know. So we're creating a shelter, a protection from those exposures, like potential future creditors, divorcing spouses of the children, and those other risks that the kids can experience in adulthood. And so I always groan when someone tells, like, they contacted an attorney and they're like, well, I just asked for what the cost of a plan is or a trust, because I know somebody told me I needed a trust because I have kids, and they're given an exact number. Like, if you contact a lawyer and they tell you that the cost of creating a trust plan for parents, like for parents with minors, my trust plan is X, it's a specific amount, that without knowing any, like you were saying, you know, anything about you at all, like those things that we just talked about, like that should be a red flag that they create the same thing for every single family, for every single person. And that may or may not align with your values, your goals, you know, for your money and family. And this is your legacy. It should be about you, not about their, you know, pipeline system of just like churning things out. So everything that I do them in flat fee tiered package formats. So there's a bunch of different types of plans you can do, like I said, but there's also a number of things that I like to do things kind of in these flat fees, but a la carte. So there's a number of add-ons, but there's takeaways. So some clients, you know, they only want to pay for what they choose to plan for, not all the things that that lawyer wants to dump into that plan and then charge a bunch of money for it. So, you know, for me, that's one of those key differences that I created when I went out on my own. Paying hourly for plans, that's expensive. Paying, you know, one flat fee for everyone, it's probably going to fall short when it comes to actually you know, you needing it to work for your family when something happens to you, like, period. So my kind of conclusion and message for you here is this: you focus on what you want your legacy to be for your loved ones, and I will focus on making that the reality for you and help you to choose and create, and you know, you create your own budget in doing, in the process of doing that in the session. So if you contact an attorney, prepare a plan for you. And that does not include all of the ancillary documents as well. And by ancillary, we mean accompanying documents. Then that is not the attorney for you. In my plans, like, I always include the wills, the trust. That is the foundation of every single plan, for no matter what kind of trust you decide to do. So they have the wills, the trust, financial powers of attorney. So that is your emergency backup person that will make sure your mortgage gets paid and the things like that. Again, if the will is not in place, you need a financial person that can act for you if you can't do it yourself. In the meantime, you don't want to come out of the hospital of 2 months in there from COVID-19 and your house is in foreclosure, you know? So those things are included: healthcare directives, like we mentioned, and the guardian guide, which is something specific to me. I think I mentioned that, to do all of that emergency planning that doesn't belong in the will or trust. And so all of those things, pretty much, I feel every family should have all the things. And so all of the plans that I do include all of those, regardless of like what tier you're in, of those things. Like, you should have that global holistic support for all parts, you know, all the moving pieces. And so let's talk for a minute though about tracking financials, because this is another place where, you know, I said, I'm not going to leave families, you know, I'm not going to serve families this way without a way for their designated team to be able to know where everything is in an emergency and how to access it. And this is the number one expense during probate, and really the reason why there's something like 58 million, the last time I checked, in just the state, of $58 million sitting in the Department of Unclaimed Funds right now. The families don't know that an account existed. The person dies, the account goes dormant because no one knew to transfer it or ask for it or ask for that policy to be paid out, or, you know, whatever that looks like. And it gets moved to the unclaimed funds department, and they're called something like that in every state. That is, to me, that's tragic. And so all the years that I've been practicing, I hate to age myself, but I'm going on 19 years of practice this year. I have never been able to understand why these firms send their clients on their way tracking of assets or understanding how to fund a trust. And so I do plan reviews all the time, and I see plans where the family paid like $4,500, $5,500 for a trust plan, and the attorney did not even help them put their assets into the trust. It's like, So now, like, I don't expect anyone to know what that even means, like funding the trust or how that works or any of those things. But again, it's like, let me worry about that. But that's the exact point. Attorneys do. They know exactly what they're supposed to do, and they know what it means if it isn't done. So if they're failing to fund a trust as part of a plan, and you've paid $4,000 or $5,000 for something like that, you've got a 120-page document that is worth $0. And so sometimes you have to start over. And as someone who practices from the heart, you know, I take it really personally, like with every single family that I work with. And connect with those families. I can even get emotional about it. So when I connect with those families I serve, it is absolutely heartbreaking to me to have to go to a client and tell them they just wasted their money and they have to pay something more now to me. I don't even want to do it. It's awful. And so to the lawyer who did that plan, like, you know who you are, it isn't considered malpractice. It's considered common practice. And so to me, that is not coming from a place of service. To leave a client lacking in that way, I will not do it. So that is something that should be key to all planning, regardless of if you go do it on your own, you go to LegalZoom, Rocket Lawyer, anything, Google something, I don't care. Make sure you at least create a spreadsheet or something that has a way to tell those people that you want to be in charge, like how to access it. One of the things that we do, and this is a key tip, some people get nervous about it. My clients, we have an encrypted client portal that they can use as a cloud to secure documents and keep them there for as long as they want. But when we do this asset tracking, there's an asset tracking tool that I've created that is part of all the plan packages. And so I always tell them, put a password on it. We do it as an Excel with like a bunch of different tabs and stuff. And so I say, password protect the spreadsheet, put it in a Dropbox solely for estate planning for your people. And they will know what the password is. If they're supposed to have access to it, they will know what the password is. They will know how to get into that Dropbox, which is secure, Google Drive, whatever. And you're actually going to put on there your log passwords and how you access those forms. So that can sound scary. You can encrypt it or do whatever you want with it. But then in an emergency, you're not going to court asking permission to do something that needs to be done to protect you, the family, whatever. And when it comes to probate, there can be a 2-3 week delay on what we call emergency hearings to access funds. And that's crazy. And so I've been telling everybody too, I can only imagine what that time frame is going to start looking like on a court docket where tens of thousands of people have died at the same time. And so that is scary to me. So asset tracking is a huge key. And if there's like no other takeaway that anybody, you know, hears from anything that I say, you know, today, that would be the one thing. And then, like I said, you focus on their legacy and the other things. I'll focus on the organization and executing that plan for you. And we'll figure out together what that plan should be. So I hope that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I really liked your explanation of all that, because I used to see that all the time in my job, where people, like, somebody would just pass away, they'd call in and say, I want to receive, you know, X from this account, and it wasn't set up properly. The lawyer didn't set everything up right, or they have to go to probate and it's going to take weeks or longer and it's going to take a lot of money. And right now the family's like, well, how do I pay for the funeral? How do I set up this?
Yes.
Like, how do, and they can't do that because they aren't able to access it. Or they may hear about it months later, years later, that, oh, there was an account for my family and I didn't know about it. And why did anybody contact me? Now I have to pay all these fees to even access that account. And so it's just, it was, I really liked how you explained that and how thorough your practice is, because I didn't witness a lot of that previously. So it's really good to see that that's out there and that you have these plans for people. This is, it's really, really wonderful. What are the common reasons that you see that people just kind of tend to shy away from estate planning, or what could you say to them to make their, put their mind at ease and feel a little better about the process?
Yes. So first I would say it's the same reason that most moms listening to this right now haven't had a shower all week. Right? It's hard. It feels like there is no time for, you know, brushing your hair or peeing alone, especially right now while we're in this like cuckoo quarantine and, you know, while we're recording this, but, you know, let alone going and finding your house deed. And no. So, but, you know, in all seriousness though, it feels daunting. It feels scary. And to think about not being there for our kids is hard. And I also think large number of parents out there that have absolutely no idea the consequences for not having the planning in place. 62% of Americans in general, it's like a rough estimate when, you know, surveys are done, don't have any estate planning in place. And if you focus, you know, just on those with minor kids, that percentage is more like 85 or 90. It's crazy. So you should be proud of yourself, because you've done more than probably 90% of anyone, you know, in the state. But the two things that I hear the most are, one, like my sister or insert friend, family member here, you know, knows what to do. And everybody agrees that, you know, she gets the kids, she gets the house. So I don't need to write anything down legally. Wrong. No, nope. Doesn't work that way. Or two, you know, I don't have enough assets to make it worth spending the money on or to need a will. Again, sorry, doesn't work that way. And I know that sounds harsh, but think of me as like that mama bear saying, okay, time to wake up. You know, I want you to be safe and healthy and eat your vegetables, okay? So if you have kids and you don't legally document the guardians, the court doesn't give a flying, you know, about your great plans. They don't care. To them, they don't exist. So the same goes for all of the assets. You own a home, maybe you're mortgaged to your eyeballs, so you don't think that, you know, you need to do anything about it. There's nothing you're going to get out of it or something like that. But they don't care about that either. The house, all the assets, life insurance, they look at the value. of what would happen when it's sold or things like that. And that's where like estate tax comes from, the value, right? Just like anything else, capital gains, all those things. So we look at all of those things. So I have a lot of people that when I talk to them about it, they're like, well, all I have is a house, a life insurance policy, because my kids are young, either they got it through work or that was like the one thing they kind of, you know, put the investment into, and some retirement. So they're like, I'm not really worth anything unless I'm dead. And I'm like, yeah, ding, ding, ding. Like that's what we're talking about. And that's exactly when you're going to, you know, it be in a situation you don't want your family to be in. And so, you know, so that goes for the assets too. So that alone could end up, and I'm just, you know, like most of the clients I work with, their life insurance is somewhere between 500,000 and like 2 million. It kind of depends on where you are in life, where you are in income and assets and all of those things. But just that and a home in Minnesota where the market values are so high, that could look at 20,000 or more in probate cost. Like bam. And the rule of thumb is that if you have a will-based plan in place, no trust, but you've just listed everything in your will, that the cost of probate will be roughly 2% of the value. Don't think about the mortgage or any debt or equity, the value of your overall estate with all those things paying out. If you have what we call the do-nothing plan, you know, this, I've just chosen to do nothing, I'm going to let the court decide, that's more like 5% of the value of your estate. So that's a huge chunk of money. And then in Minnesota, which is different than a lot of other states, just having that life insurance in a house can land you in a situation where you're paying estate tax, because there is an estate tax in Minnesota. And that's kind of too, because people will say, oh, well, I know that this administration changed the estate tax to like 25 million. Yes, federally, the IRS, we're not really focused on planning. That could change with a different administration, but we're really not focused on that. But in Minnesota, we are focused on a very low threshold of what you can have in your estate before you're paying estate tax. And the estate tax ranges from 12 to 16%. So it's not as high as the federal 45%, but 12 to 16% on, you know, quite a few hundred thousands of dollars just in a house alone is, you know, it adds up. So there is an exemption amount that you can have, and I won't go into all that craziness, but you know, those are kind of the misconceptions or things I see. And so, like I said before, I really think that that money is better spent on things like college. It should go to those things to support your family or support your spouse when they have to take time off work because they just lost you, you know, or like you're going through that trauma and having to replace all of those things that you do as a spouse or your spouse does, you know, whichever, that are non-monetary, you know, all those household things, the childcare and the, you know, house stuff. And I always say that everybody's got a family CEO and CFO. So whichever one you are, you know, all those things that you do for the household that, you know, those aren't monetary, but they have to be replaced somehow. And so I think that money should go to those things, you know, instead. So how do we make it easier? How do we avoid the cost and the time and the effort and all that, frankly, you know, mess of probate that you would otherwise, you know, be leaving for the family? And as you say, you've seen that in, you know, in your previous job and stuff like that. So if you, and if anyone's ever had to deal with probate for like a parent or a loved one, they know what I'm talking about. It's really not easy. And so the answer is you outsource that shit. You outsource it. You, this is not something that you should be doing alone, no matter, you know, what LegalZoom or Google tells you. This is where my business model came from, because the whole point of Legal Mama's platform is to take that burden off you, because let me be of service to you so that you can go back to wiping butts and Paw Patrol on repeat, so that you can answer work emails, you know, and things like that. Like, this is not what you should be focusing on. I got you. So now, you know, I can't make a decision for you of like who you should choose as guardian, right? You have to choose the guardian for your kids. But if that's the reason you're stuck or you haven't done anything, which is another big one that I get, then no, I can't make the decision for you, but we'll talk through it in that session. There, again, you know, I've got you. There's a lot of counseling that happens in a family wealth planning session if you need it. And so let me worry about putting everything in place and you just figure out the details of that. We do some exercises when we do the family wealth planning session of like, okay, if you and your spouse cannot decide on who the guardians should be, we're going to make a pros and cons list, but we're going to do it legal style, you know? And so we really do work through all of those things. So if, you know, if this is why you've waited so long and and all of that, then, you know, you can put it to rest. I mean, it's really just, it's kind of like anything else. The hardest thing is acknowledging you've got to do it, right? And so that's really kind of what I have to say about that. The number one review I get from clients once they have hired me is, I've waited so long to do this because, like, it was so overwhelming and daunting to even think about the decisions. But once I did it, it was like, oh, it was so easy because you just kind of, like, walked me through everything, and then just all I had to do was be like, oh yeah, I want it to be my sister, or, you know, or whatever, or we work through the exercises, and then it's like, okay, well, you're done now. So, and the idea is you don't have to redo it all the time. So that's really, I think that's the big takeaway. You know, it's just like, it doesn't, I know emotionally it's hard, but it doesn't have to be hard. Other things are hard. Parenting is hard. This doesn't have to be hard.
How often would you recommend reviewing or updating your estate plan? Or, like, what advice would you give to somebody like myself who has an estate plan or some kind of plan in place right now, but is not sure if he or she has all of the pieces?
Yes, good question. So most plans should be drafted that they can be flexible and grow with you. I don't always see that. I always draft all the plans, so they really should only ever need updating at all. If you are changing any of the choices, so like the people, the guardians, trustees, executor, who's, you know, the person who's going to execute that plan, either if they're no longer available or alive, or you've changed your mind about their parenting style, you know, who knows, I've seen it all. Any of those things, you're going to update that, but that can be a simple amendment. It doesn't have to be like you're redoing the whole thing. And then if you know, and that goes for things like healthcare agents, like who you want making those decisions or any of those things for you, you can update that. The only other thing that we really ever have to update the plan for is if you chose at the time of planning, and this is how my plans work. If you chose at the time of planning for either the budget that we build or the design of kind of like what things you want protections on and what things you are forgoing at this time, you know, you're making those decisions as we work through the planning. If there are any complexities or protections that are available out there to you through like the trust planning, it makes the plan more expensive because it adds a tier onto it or something. If you choose to forgo that, when you're initially planning, but you come back later and you either say, well, now my kids are older, or, you know, now my kids are older, or I see a personality trait coming out in one, or we know there's mental health issues, or just things that they're going to need support in a different way moving forward, or just any of those kinds of things. Or you're just in a more financially secure place where you're like, we're ready to spend more on a more secure plan at this time. Then you put those things on and amend them. Thing that I always includes, you know, encompass future born done with your family planning. You are, you know, to, you're going to sell your home and get a new one later, or things like that. That should all kind of be incorporated into the plan. You should never have to update just for those little things. All of that is kind of, because I do all of this, I've created these plans in the way that I draft, knowing I'm working with families with young kids. Your life is going to change over time. Like, that's just the reality. You want that to change with you without having to constantly go back and deal with it. So the beauty of when we do trusts that we fund, and again, like, go on a whole thing about trusts, but planning with called a revocable living trust, then you are putting your assets into those accounts now. But the beauty of that, I always refer to it or describe it as like, if you think of like a radio flyer wagon, like a little red wagon that the kids have, and they're pulling it with all their toys and whatever. But if you take all of the things you own, your house, your cash accounts, your investments, all those things, you put them in the wagon, then you leave the life insurance, retirement, those things outside of it because beneficiary designated, they're on their own. We change those beneficiaries to go into the wagon. When that happens, when something happens to you, everything's already in there. It's just you're moving. Maybe you're moving out of, everything's already in the wagon, and that wagon goes with you whatever state you're in. So you don't have to change anything. And the biggest really benefit of doing things that way is like when something happens to you, when you die, then either your spouse just continues on with it, or if it's somebody else that's having to take over for the benefit of your kids and manage that trust, they pick up that handle, they keep going. Like, it's real simple. You're not dealing with all this probate nonsense and all of this stuff, the time, the delay, the public nature of it, you know, all that's public record. So when we do the trust, it's a lot easier. So for those kinds of things, you know, you really never have to update it unless you want to add protections into that trust that it's something it doesn't, a function it doesn't already do. And so the way that I work is I like to make those tiered flat fee plans where it's very clear what it does and doesn't do. I like transparency. So when we sit down, you know exactly what you're getting, what you've chosen to add into it, and what you don't want. And so we talk through that, and then they, you know, the clients will always know during that session if they say, this isn't something I want to do today. Again, kind of going back to that beginning, no judgment from me ever. It's up to you, and it's your decision as a family. Like, that has nothing to do with me. I don't care whether you choose the very basic entry plan or the very top tier plan. It does not matter to me as long as that meets your values and your goals. So whatever that looks like for you, we build that, and then you will know what you might need to add on later. Or if you say, you know what, that's just, that doesn't speak to us, that doesn't, it's not our thing, then it's like, you know what, you'll probably be okay. Like, you could go 25 years, your kids will long be adults, and you never change it. And that's fine too, because those plans are also built to deal with you as older adults and to deal with adult children. Don't have to change it then either. So the idea, you know, again, I know I could, you know, elaborate on that a lot longer, but the idea is, so for my clients, we do a 3-year plan review at no cost for every tier of planning. That way it's just a check-in. It's, we usually do an hour meeting where we say, let's look at assets, let's look at family changes, dynamics, anything you need to know. Let's look at the law. Has the law or anything changed? Of course, if there's something that triggers, like they all of a sudden have, you know, a tax obligation or liability, of course they would hear from me before that. But in general, let's just see how the family's grown and what is the play I need to do. So we do a 3-year review. All of my clients have options to do like memberships and all kinds of crazy stuff that, you know, millennial style, that they can say, well, I want it reviewed every year and I want my CPA and my financial planner to be there too. Great, let's do it. Everybody will be on the same page and it's organized. So it's really, again, it's very much you're in control and how much you want to do. But I would say that your plan should at least be looked at every 3 years. Some attorneys will say every year, but if you're meeting with them and paying to do that, then yeah, that's great. They get a fee for that. No. review it every year. And that may just mean pull it out of the drawer, you know, put in, and I say drawer, that's a no-no. It should be in a fireproof safe, but you know what I mean? Pull it out of the drawer, make sure you know where it is. The family still knows where it is, all those good things. But really, it's a matter of keeping that asset tracking that I talked about up to date. You open a new account, you slap that on that spreadsheet, you do it, you know, as long as you keep that up. And it's as much of a pain in the butt as doing taxes. I get it, you know, but if you keep that stuff going, then there's nothing really to update when the year comes around, you know? So it's all about planning.
Yeah. Wow. There's just, you just have so much, a wealth of information. And we know that you know a lot about estate planning. That's one of your main services. But what other services do you offer?
Oh, gosh. Well, I really only offer estate planning and business startup and planning right now. The purpose of that is really just for me. It's, you know, it's my own choice of like, I want to focus on my true passion, which is estate planning. I want to continue to be a leader in this area of law, and I want to continue to be at my heart center of like where I want to be and serve. And so I decided a few years back that I really wanted to scale back the other areas of law that I was practicing because my heart just wasn't in it. So I'm happy to say that this is where I want to be, and that's really the things that I focus on. I do have an attorney. So I still have an Atlanta practice full time as well. So I have an attorney there that does most of the business stuff now, but I still oversee everything. I always touch everything. I always initially meet with the clients myself. Like, nothing is done without me being personally involved. I will even say that every single client who works with me has my personal cell phone number. If they need me, they call me. If they get in a car accident and they're like, I don't even know how to find, you know, I don't do that kind of law, but I will make sure that you are supported, connected, and you're protected. You know, that's just, you know, my mama bear style. So, yeah, so it's sticking with estate planning. I don't plan that on that changing really at any point in my career going forward.
So what if somebody, you know, is really loving what they're hearing and thinking, this is who I want to go with, and how would they contact you? How open are you for availability, I guess? And, you know, is there an office nearby, or is it through the phone, or how kind of do they set up an appointment with you?
Yes. So you can find me in any of the places, social media, Instagram, Facebook, The Legal Mama. I think Facebook is Briner Law LLC. You can email me. I'm guessing you guys will probably have at least the basic contact and show notes and stuff, right? So, and you can private message me, DM me, whatever. I respond to all of those personally. As far as, and so the number one thing I have is, and Facebook has it the easiest, Facebook and Instagram, the Acuity scheduler is on there. So there is a button that says book now. That will allow you only to book an initial consult. And then we will talk through all of the personal kind of like details, like I said in the beginning. We do that call first, and then we can talk through what your needs are and where you need to be and getting you scheduled for the planning session. The way that I do the planning sessions is that there is a fee to that. I usually charge $750 because it's 2 working hours of time, and there's usually a lot more prep that goes into that. However, if you guys want to do a link, I can get you a link to a coupon code essentially to waive that fee. So they would get, just for Mom's Dish, that they would get basically a $750 gift certificate. And so I will help them schedule that. There are links specifically to do that, because otherwise it's going to charge, you know, it's going to ask to charge something. But beyond that, we go through that process that way. So the key first thing to do is just to book a call so I can get to know you and really see what your needs are and how I can best be of service.
Wow. Thank you so much. That is fantastic. Yeah. So you'd set up, so go to one of your online or social media pages.
Yeah, Facebook or Instagram are the easiest.
And book one of those initial consultations. And then did you mention, I'm sorry, where is your office located?
Oh, yeah, I did not mention that. So here is the beauty of this. Legal Mama has always been and will always be virtual. And if you are in the Twin Cities metro area, when we are not in quarantine or self-distancing, I just come to your house. We do weekends. We do what, you know, there's a lot of flexibility in scheduling. So that initial call we do online, if you're somewhere farther out, because you, I meet with as far as, you know, St. Cloud or Moorhead or anywhere, like south, you name it. As long as it's within the borders of the state, I can do it. And so if it's not drivable, then we do it by Zoom, and I can do everything virtually through the encrypted client portal. And we even walk through, you know, getting the legal documents signed. I still do all of that for them. I notarize everything and all of that. So all of that is set up to be virtual, or when it's safe to do that, in their home. And all of the follow-ups are done, you know, usually through the secured messaging, through Zoom calls and all kinds of stuff. So the idea of that, and it's kind of funny, when the whole, you know, quarantine happened, I'm in quite a few, you know, lawyers groups and you know, messaging boards and all this. And people were like, how do you use Zoom? And I'm like, yeah. So my system has been set up already for 5 years to do virtual meetings, and everything that I do, I use a whiteboard and an Apple Pencil. I mean, like, it's just what I do. So my theory is, again, it's like, you know, your parents, you have a lot going on, trying to figure out a time to take off work, coordinate schedules, coordinate childcare, go into some office, have to deal with parking. Like, no way. That's just crap. So instead, we do it at your house. The kids can be running around screaming. I come with a bag of Legal Mama coloring, crayons, pencils, pages, like, you name it. I'm like, if you need to go feed them, nurse them, put them to sleep, wipe poopy butts, like, I don't care. Like, don't ever apologize for parenting, because everyone, you know, everyone's like, I'm so sorry. Can you wait a minute? I'm like, stop apologizing for parenting. That's like why I'm here. So yeah, it's to make it as easy as possible on the parents. Like, again, I take that burden. I got you, you know, and you guys do the parenting, and we'll get the stuff like fit in between. So there is technically no office. I work out of Eden Prairie, but I go everywhere. So there it is.
That sounds awesome. I love the come to your house, don't need a babysitter, easy.
No babysitter. Yeah.
Thank you so much for being on the show today. I've learned a lot, and I've learned that there's some things I might need to add to my estate plan, so that's even better.
Yes. And- And yes. Really quick, going back to that, anybody who calls me who wants to do a family wealth planning session, if you have something in place that you have already done, whether it's another attorney, you did it online, you did it 20 years ago, I will review all of that and you will get a 50 point to a 99 point, depending on what kind of plan you have, checklist for me that says exactly what protections you have and don't have in place. So it's not a question of like, well, I recommend you do this, but that costs this. No, you will actually know what it does and doesn't do compared to anything else. So you will have a very clear understanding of how you are already protected. And you know, truthfully, I do have clients that come to me and I review it and I'm like, listen, I could do a new or different kind of trust for you, but this is fine. And so don't waste the money doing it right now. Just make sure you start focusing on the tracking and the other things like that. So yeah. Yes, you can absolutely have that reviewed. You can call me anytime. I have unlimited communication with all my clients. Nobody ever gets a bill in the mail for asking a question. And that was one of those things that just, I feel like, deterred so many people when I was working at a firm. And I was like, yeah, not doing it. Anybody can reach me anytime. You can text me on my cell phone if you want. Just don't think I'm weird. It's still an Atlanta area code.
That sounds awesome. You may be hearing from me.
You must be getting texts like all times of the day.
I do. But, you know, I mean, you guys know it's like that mom sleep never goes away. You're never really fully asleep anymore. And Somebody's always getting up that they need water or whatever. So I tend to, when I do those things, my kids are 5 and 8. So my 5-year-old is still doing a lot of the getting up in the night and wanting to get in bed with us and all that. So I'm like, fine, whatever. And then I check my So.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I can relate. My daughter in the middle of this interview was knocking on the door behind me when she's supposed to be sleeping like an hour ago. So I can I can relate.
That's just real, mama, right? Like that's just, it is what it is. And we're all in it together, quarantine or no quarantine. Like we're in this mom, you know, world and experience together. And we have to support each other and lift each other up, right? So, you know, if somebody's knocking on a podcast, like that's okay.
So everyone, so go check out Breiner Law Firm. So Breiner Law Firm. And go enter that code if you're into the consultation and just take notes, because if you already have a plan set up, like you may be missing a lot of things. Like there's just a lot that in this episode that was just, even me, I've had a ton of knowledge in estate planning and I learned an incredible amount. So this was so great.
I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah. Thank you for being with us and just sharing how you're different. And And
I loved it. It was so much fun. I can geek out on this all day. Well,
thank you.
We are so glad you joined us for Mom's Dish Minnesota. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Mom's Dish MN. Visit our website at momsdishmn.com for show notes and to subscribe to our email list.
If you wish to have a song featured on our podcast, please contact us. Love this episode of Mom's Dish MN? Head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and leave us a review. Join us next time and enjoy the music.